Welcome back to the High Functioning Disaster, the show where we stop pretending and start unpacking the truth about what it means to hold it all together. This is part two of my conversation with trauma-informed healer Emma Lyons, founder of the Trauma Matrix and the creator of the concept of the inner narcissist. In this half, we move from awareness to action. Emma shares practical tools for calming your nervous system, from the power of an audible sigh to the deeper science behind breathwork and yoga. We talk about what it really means to feel safe being seen, why visibility can trigger shame, and how her break framework helps interrupt those old shame loops before they take over. It's powerful. It's freeing, and it's one of those episodes that'll have you nodding along and saying, oh, that's what's been happening. Let's get into it. So for someone who feels like they've done all the work, but they feel like that nothing seems to be sticking, where should they start?
And this is the thing. If you've done all the therapy, if you've done all the work on yourself, maybe you've gone to therapy, you might have a lot of self-awareness. But self-awareness, like I said, it's just a small percentage of the whole physical being and how we store all of the shame and all of the trauma. So, I mean, the work with the breath, really simple way of doing it, you know, just like, like even doing a little sigh, it's kind of giving your body, your nervous system, the permission to just relax a little bit. You know, doing things like breath work is a really good one as well. Doing exercise without, pushing, doing yoga, things like that, they're all working with rewiring the nervous system so that your body can actually feel safe to relax and restore itself. Because if you think about it, if your body's on high alert all the time, your body's not going to really get that downtime to regenerate, and this can lead to, diseases and other physical things happening in the body that maybe we would have been able to address and deal with had we not been walking around in survival state.
I love that you brought up breath work. All three things that you just mentioned, the audible sigh, breath work, and yoga. So I've done all three, and the audible sigh is truly relieving. If you've just got a few seconds.
Yeah, and it's so simple. You can do it anywhere,
Yeah. An audible sigh is, it's very relaxing for some reason. And I am one who holds a lot of tension in my shoulders, and just a couple of really deep breaths with an audible sigh, I can feel that tension release. Yeah. And it's incredible. Breath work. I don't know the science behind it. I really don't know how it works. I can just say that it does. It's really helpful. And it's really mind blowing on the side of how you feel psychologically, I guess, because it's healing in some way. And I have no idea how that works. And I have, and then when I was a teenager, I was diagnosed with anxiety and panic disorders. And yoga was literally the only thing that I found that I don't know how to explain it any other way than it sort of reset my nervous system.
Exactly,
and I felt relaxed, and I just felt like I could process my surroundings, all the information, because we're bombarded with information all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
And instead of being constantly overwhelmed, I was able to function as quote normal. And it's so impressive. And I think yoga is one of the easiest things that you can do, because you can look up YouTube videos and do yoga. But I recommend that to to lots of people. And I know, like, my best friend, she tells me that I'm trying to kill her with yoga, because she did try it a couple of times, and she's not incredibly flexible. And so she said, it's not for me, but it's for everybody. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, even if you're not working on your nervous system and your mindset and your psychological side, everybody needs flexibility as you get older. Flexibility is incredibly important for your body.
Yeah, and you don't need to really focus on that. You can focus. There are types of yoga like yin yoga that are much more relaxed and more about really, you know, stretching the body and really letting go of control. Because the type of yoga that we have in the West now, it's very physical. And it's become a little bit about the ego, you know, and look at me, look how great I look, look how great I can do this posture. And obviously, that's not what yoga is about. Yoga means union. So yoga is about uniting yourself with, you know, the higher, whatever it is that you believe in, the higher part of you. So, you know, the physical is just one method of getting there. It's not the purpose. It's not the end in itself.
I love some yin yoga, because that really, it really gets into the connective tissues and the fascia and helps it to release. And it's so relaxing. But anyway, I can go down that rabbit hole. So why do visibility and receiving wealth, attention, recognition trigger so many women?
Because the whole idea of being visible, it opens us up to being shamed. And, you know, this is the anxiety, perfectionism, you know, we're going to be judged. And that's even before anyone shames us, we're already anticipating that. And that's anxiety, you know. So many different things, they can be traced back to shame, like imposter syndrome, self-sabotage, procrastination. Shame is a very, very heavy part of that, of why we do that. And when we separate ourselves, the more we free ourselves of shame, the less inclined to do any of those things. So it's really I'm going to sound like a broken record, but so many of these things come back to shame. And shame is not, I don't believe it's a thing that we need. It's not an emotion. It's like, just if you look at the people have tracked the emotions and from the highest vibration to the lowest. And shame is right there, just above death. It's the lowest vibrational frequency in terms of the emotions. You know, then you have guilt after that. The thing with guilt is that it's become, guilt and shame have become so fused that usually when people, 99.999 times when people experience guilt, they experience it with a very large portion of shame on the side. And a lot of people confuse and conflate those two things. And when people defend shame, you can often see that they're conflating guilt and shame as well, because shame is completely indefensible as an emotion. There's nothing good about it. It doesn't protect us in any way. It doesn't make you better human. It doesn't make you say sorry more. It doesn't make you change your behavior. And the science would back this up, because, you know, our you know, penal system is based on shaming, you know, and do people go off and do it again? You know, it doesn't help. The shaming doesn't help people to change their behavior. But the thing is, it works quickly in the moment. If I shame someone now, they stop doing it. So it looks very impressive in the moment. But in the medium to long term, it's very toxic and very ineffective in terms of long term results.
So visibility.
Yeah, it's visibility. We're afraid of being visible. We're afraid of being seen, being judged, being shamed. So we kind of keep ourselves in a box and kind of shame ourselves and say, I can't be seen. And it can also be, it can be overt, obviously, but shame can be under the surface, under the radar. Maybe we're not even aware of it. But if we're afraid of visibility, if we're afraid of showing up, as so many of us are, That's what's operating underneath the surface. There's a fear of being judged. What are people going to say? Oh, I'm going to say the wrong thing. This anticipatory shame that I spoke about earlier, that's what it is that prevents us from showing up and being fully authentically us. And what I realize as well is that shame It's the opposite of authenticity. If you're carrying a lot of shame, you absolutely cannot be authentic. You cannot show up authentically because shame tells you that you're not good enough and you have to wear a mask and you have to be false and you have to be like this so that people will like you. So you absolutely can't be authentic when you're carrying lots of shame.
And so this, as what you're speaking about right now, is that a trauma response?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It is a trauma response because we were shamed as a child. So we thought, oh, I'll just keep myself small so that I won't be hurt like that again. And so many traits that people think are their personality, you know, I'm shy, I have anxiety. These are trauma responses that we learned in childhood because we learned that it's not safe when we meet people, they shame us or something bad might happen. So we got to keep ourselves safe, first of all, keep ourselves safe from shaming or from, you know, shaming is like death, you know, so it's like, oh my God, I have to protect myself from the shaming. So I'll just keep myself tiny in the corner and nobody will be able to hurt me. But it means that you don't live your life. You know, you never get to be the person you were born to be. And that's what shame does. It stops you from being the person you were born to be. This is why it's so lethal.
What does it look like to feel truly safe to be seen?
You don't care what anyone thinks. Someone can come up to you and say, oh, you've got a big nose, and you'd be like, okay, you take that back. That's your projection, you know, like the ice cream story that I told you. You'd just be like, that person is crazy. You don't let it in. We only experience shame when we have this inner narcissist that says, yeah, you've got a big nose, or yeah, you've got big hips, or yeah, you're too fat. Otherwise, we don't experience shame. You know, that voice whispers to us and says, oh, yeah, you did look kind of stupid, you know, and then we start doubting and second guessing ourselves and, you know, wondering. And again, that's the shame voice that we've internalized. But yeah, people come to us with their shaming and we'll just be like, okay, return to sender. That's your projection, friend. I'm not taking it for you. You can have that back.
Do you think that the inner narcissist can show up with different people in your life? For example, maybe it shows up with a parent or a sibling, but it doesn't show up with anyone else.
I mean, it's there all the time because it's something that we've all internalized, but you may have certain people that activate it more where you experience that more kind of contracted shaming sense more. So when you're around certain people, maybe you think that they're better than you or something, you might experience more shame in that moment and kind of contraction. But that narcissistic thing is inside you all the time. So it's about how connected are you to it, how aware of you. You might not be aware of it all the time, but that doesn't mean that it's not there, if that answers your question.
Yes, I can understand that. And so I'm curious, does feeling like you need to behave in a particular way or walk on eggshells for someone, is that what we're talking about here too?
Absolutely. Yeah. The walking on eggshells thing, that's, again, it's a trauma response. You were taught that it's not safe. And again, that's about shaming because a lot of time it's not about physical, maybe you children were physically beaten or whatever, sexually abused, but also shaming. If you were just shamed as a child, it does that same thing. You're like, oh my God, I have to be very careful. What are they going to say now? What are they going to do? You know, so you have to tiptoe your way. Most people do that their whole life. They're walking on eggshells their whole freaking life until they get to death and hopefully survive, you know, but they never really get to live. They never get to be who they really came here to be because they're just living from that shame. And that shame is controlling everything that they do and everything that they don't do because it says, you can't do that. You can't start that podcast. Who are you to do that? Who are you to be a dancer? You could never succeed at that, you know? Just stay where you are. Just stay small. And when you listen to that, people have gone their whole lifetimes, you know, dancing to that voice and performing for that. And it's, you know, we use that word shame, you know, it's such a shame, you know, it's a shame because they never get to realize who they really are. They never get to connect with their true power. And that's what shame does. It disconnects you from your power. It tells you that you're powerless and that you're nothing and that you just should just stay in the corner and say nothing.
So for someone who maybe carries around a lot of childhood trauma, is there ever a point in their life that it's too late to work on this inner narcissist and the shame that they feel and they operate out of? I mean, is, you know, somebody who is elderly, is it too late for them?
Absolutely not. It's never too late to change how you feel about yourself. And we all have a duty and obligation to do this, because if you don't work on your own internalized shame, guess where it goes? It gets passed on to your kids. And if you don't have kids, you know, you take it out on the people around you, your partner, your boyfriend, your girlfriend. You will be passing that shaming on, because the shame, it's not a digestible emotion. You'll be taking it out on them, or you'll be internalizing it and beating yourself up, or some combination of the two. So, yeah, it's never too late. And, you know, it's like asking, is it ever too late to be free? No, it's never too late to be free. You know, this is a choice. You've got to make a decision that you don't want to live like that anymore. And that's what it really takes. It's a decision that you're not going to live from that shame anymore, that shame is no longer going to control you. And that's really what it takes. It doesn't matter about your age.
I agree with that. So I'm glad that you said, because I think it shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter what other people think of you. Unfortunately, as we've been discussing, it does for so many people, and they've internalized those negative inputs, I guess, from other people, the things that they've received, and then internalized it as shame and self-loathing. What can somebody do, just if they're listening right now? What is one thing they can do right now in this moment to help themselves?
Yeah, I do have a system which I'll take you through. So it's called BREAK, BREAK. So this is how you start taking back your power from shame. So when shame attacks, the first thing, the most critical thing, is to recognize that shame is not your friend, that shame has no benefit, that it doesn't protect you, that it's not trying to keep you safe, that it's trying to keep you small, it's trying to destroy your life. So that once you recognize that, that's step one. That's really important, because otherwise we're entrained in our culture to think that shaming is good for you. Okay, so that's the first thing. So you got to recognize that it's not good for you, that it's always serving it and not you, and that it has no benefits. Like, I defy anyone to find a benefit of shame that really is about shame and not guilt, because it does no good. It serves no purpose other than control. And once you recognize that, so B, you've got to break the trance. When that shaming voice comes, recognize that it's not your voice, that it's kind of spell, that collective spell that we're all under. We're under a trance. So you catch it, you interrupt it, you don't overthink it, you just name it and recognize, this is a trance, this is shame, it's not here to help me. And that automatically interrupts the loop. Then you go on to R, which is refuse to engage. And this is really important. Dr. Ramani, who's the expert on narcissists out there in the world, she talks about deep. Don't defend, don't engage, don't explain, and don't personalize. So don't argue with this thing. Don't try to defend yourself. Just say, not today. Not today, Satan. Not today, bitch. You don't owe this thing any politeness, because, you know, it's trying to destroy your life. So not today, bitch. You know, that's what I say. Or you can just say not today. You can be totally neutral with it as well. Then you want E, expose the lie. So call out the shame-based programming. What's it saying to you? Oh my God, I'm so fat. I have a big nose, a big hip, whatever BS it's pulling, you know, recognize this is control. It's not empirically true that you have a big nose. What does a big nose mean anyway? Like, oh my God, it's all relative. So this is about control. This is not true. This is not your story. And speaking that truth automatically disarms it. Or if it's just saying you're stupid, like my one used to tell me that I was stupid all the time. Like what exactly stupid? It's always about control. It's trying to control you. It's not trying to help you in any way, right? Then you also expose the lie. Then we go on to A, which is anchor the truth. This is really coming back to your body because, like I mentioned, shame, it kind of does a full body hijack. So you've got to come back to your body, feel your breath, you know, recognize how are you breathing, breathing into your belly, plant your feet on the earth, you know, say your name and the year, and just remind your nervous system that you're safe now. I'm safe now. I'm sovereign. I'm here. And then you can, K is kick it out. You know, you can actually physically shake that thing off, stomp it off. This is not mine. And physically shake it off your body because there is no other emotion that I know of, and I've experienced all of them, that is quite as toxic and hijacks your body the way shame does. Because again, shame is a lethal cocktail of a bunch of things, including fear, self-loathing, anger, resentment, all of it turned inwards. And it really does a full body hijack. You know, it takes over your body. So you need to come back to your body and really shake it out physically. So that's break.
That's really helpful. I appreciate you going through that. Is it? So my brain is processing all of this as you're speaking. So we have the inner narcissist, and we can use this against that sort of attack. Are these steps adaptable to an actual human being narcissist in our lives? And if so, like, how would you do that?
Well, that's the thing, because we've been, and this is the interesting thing, when I started with my own research, I recognized that the way that we're taught to deal with the narcissist out there in the world is completely different from the way that we're trained to deal with this inner critic, as it's called. With the inner critic, we're told to send it love, to take it to therapy, to sit with the shame. That's not the thing to do with the narcissist out there in the world. You want to do what Dr. Ramani says. She's the narcissist expert. You know, recognize that they're full of crap, you know, that they're not speaking the truth. Don't defend yourself. Don't engage. Don't explain and don't personalize. That's exactly what you need to do with a narcissist. So if the narcissist comes and says, you're stupid, don't defend yourself. Don't explain yourself. Just walk away. Don't let it go inside you, because they, just like the narcissist that's inside, when the call is coming from inside the house, if it has no leverage over you, they've got nothing. They can't control you anymore. So absolutely, this is the thing. Don't return it to sender. They have no power over you. Don't defend, don't engage, don't explain, and don't personalize. Don't take it personally.
I think it's really important to really get that deep inside you to not take it personally.
Yeah, because, and the way to take it personally is to, the more you exercise, like an exorcism, or get rid of this parasite that you've internalized, because then it's just like someone coming up to you and saying that you're a Coca-Cola. You'll be like, okay, you know, somebody comes up to you and says that you're a fool, and you're just like, okay, they're telling me that I'm a Coca-Cola. They're crazy. You know, it's not, you just will not take it seriously. And they will have nothing, no leverage over you. The only leverage they have, they need you to have that hook. And that hook, in order for that insult or that shame to catch, that's the inner narcissist piece. If you don't have it, it's just like those girls, the guy telling them that you're fat, if you don't eat the ice cream because you're fat, they laughed in his face. You know, you don't have to take it in.
You have to already believe that about yourself, whatever's being said.
Yeah, you need that narcissist, or you need the part of you to have believe that on some level, yeah, or to have the doubt, or to have the seed of that, mm-hmm. or to have that narcissistic voice that says, yeah, you do have a big nose, or whatever the BS that it's coming up with. I don't know why I'm talking about a big nose today. Big nose, whatever, or you've got a fat ass, or whatever the BS that it's telling you, or that you're stupid, or that you're ugly. You know, it's this doesn't mean anything. They might as well be telling you that you're a bottle. You know what? That doesn't mean anything. They're insane.
So what sort of shifts have you seen in the women that you help, and what do you see when they finally burn those old shame scripts?
Well, I mean, my program is called Reclaim Your Shameless. So this is about, because it's the only word, any other word in the English language that ends in L-E-S-S means that you're free of that thing. But when people call someone shameless, most of the time, they're acting out of a lot of repressed shame, you know, so they're not usually shameless at all. So I'm all about reclaiming our shameless, you know. The difference is that people don't put themselves down anymore. People don't take other people's crap, you know. People come up to them and say mean things, and they're just like, okay, whatever, you're crazy. You know, you don't let that in anymore. The biggest thing is that you don't beat yourself up anymore. You stop with that. You don't criticize yourself, and you stop shrinking in your life. You start taking up space. You start doing the things that you've always wanted to do, but this shame told you that you couldn't do, or that you weren't capable of doing it. You start actually living in defiance of that and actually doing it, actually visualizing it, actually feeling it in your body, and actually taking the actions to make those things happen.
So I love this conversation, and I really want to say something to you, and I'm okay with anyone hearing me say this to you. I do a pre-interview with everyone that I interview for an episode. And when we had our pre-interview, I totally was not getting what you were saying. And I don't know if you picked up on that at all, but I was like, I just don't know, but I want to try. I still want, something told me I needed to move forward and try. So I don't know what has happened between then and now, but I totally, everything that you're saying makes sense to me. And I really appreciate that you're here, and that you are, you're willing to explain and help people to break free of these shame cycles or script.
Yeah. And the thing is, most people that are helping people with shame are, you know, helping them to cope with shame. So it's, we're like I said, we're in the shame cage. And most therapists and healers and people, they're like, shame is normal. You've just got to learn how to cope with shame rather than open the fucking door and step outside, you know, and saying no to shame. And, you know, becoming shameless, really, not taking that anymore. But, you know, shame is just so normalized in our culture, and we've been gaslit to believe that it's normal and healthy and good for you. That this is the conventional wisdom tells you you've just got to get comfortable with shame. You know, it's like you're wearing a straitjacket and you just put some pearls on, you know, decorate the cage rather than open the door and get outside and actually be free. So this is a huge blind spot in our culture when it comes to shame. People are taught to cope with shame, to coddle shame, to sit down with shame, and it never leads anywhere good. We just need to release the shame and recognize that it's BS. It's all about control, and we don't need to take it in anymore. We can say no to shame.
Mm-hmm. I can totally see, though, going back to what I just said about how I didn't get what you were saying during your pre-interview, but I can see how those internal dialogues that we have with ourselves, and when it is shaming language, and how that can make you feel versus just like a normal dialogue, and when it's shame versus guilt, and then also how when you're guilty of doing something like, ooh, that was bad, if you shame yourself for it rather yeah. than go, ooh, that was bad and well, I won't do that again. Or if you need to apologize and that's something that you're willing to do, then do it rather than just continuing to carry that baggage along.
Yeah. And you absolutely don't need shame to apologize and recognize that you've done something bad. So this is another huge lie that we're taught that we need shame in order to behave well. We don't. You can recognize that you've done something that hurtful or bad without feeling shame about it, without shrinking. And it makes you much more likely, like scientifically, to actually change your behavior than if you're carrying a lot of shame. If you're carrying a lot of shame, chances are you're not going to change. You might apologize in the moment or eventually, but chances are you're not going to change because shame makes you contract and like go into a little ball. You know, and that doesn't help. That's not amenable to change.
Mm. Shame really sort of dims our light, so to speak, rather than builds us up in order to make positive changes or shifts so that our lives can be better or fuller or whatever it is that we're seeking.
Yeah, shame is the dimmer. This is the ultimate dimmer of your light. This is why I said it's the lowest frequency. It's just one up from death, you know, and this is why we're so afraid of it. And it's because it feels awful. It feels much worse than any other emotion, I would argue. And it's much more lethal and toxic than any other emotion because it's not a normal emotion. It's a cocktail. It's a lethal cocktail of a bunch of toxic emotions. And we don't need it. It serves zero purpose. It does not make you a better person. It doesn't, you know, there's this whole idea that if you do something bad and you feel shame about it, then it's okay. Then you're this whole idea of repentance, you know, you have to feel bad in order to be better. It's total bullshit, you know. It's not true at all. You don't need to feel bad in order to become a better person. You can recognize that you've done. Maybe some people need to feel guilty and maybe we need guilt still, but you don't need shame. You absolutely do not need shame. And the statistics prove that, you know, that when people are shamed, they're actually less inclined to change their behavior.
Actually, I can see that from experience with some people. If I know they're in a shame spiral or they feel shamed by someone else for something,
yeah,
they might feel like they should change and maybe make a half-hearted or a weak effort toward that, but it doesn't stick because, well, it's not helpful for change.
Yeah, and it puts you into survival mode. So you feel attacked and then you get defensive and then you absolutely don't change, you know? You get defensive. You start fighting people who are telling you things because you have the shame that's inside you. And it's like you feel attacked, even though they might not be attacking you. They might just be trying to help you change your behavior. So it's absolutely counter to change and transformation. Shame is the number one thing that stops people from transforming and changing their life. It's the number one thing that stops people from manifesting what they want. You know, I don't know. Some people, when they visualize things, you know, watch that movie, The Secret, they got great results. And some people, when they watched it, they were stuck. They tried everything they watched. It's because they were carrying a lot of shame, you know, and shame, it's like counterbalances all that. You can envision and imagine all these things. But if you're carrying a ton of shame that's not processed and you don't know how to release it, it's like you don't deserve it. It's like an anchor keeping you down. Keeping you in your little spot. And it makes transformation really, really difficult. And very few therapies really go into detail on that.
So is there anything else you would like to share with the listeners?
Yeah, I would like to say, if you feel, oh my God, I'm putting my hand up. I have this inner narcissist, this shame thing is a problem for me. I would love you to reach out to me on social media. I'm trauma.matrix. So send me a message there on Instagram or TikTok or wherever you are. And also on Substack, I'm Trauma Matrix there. So, you know, follow me there. But I also have a free gift for you guys. So, and it's called 5 Signs That It's Time to Break Up With Your Inner Narcissist. So if you're starting to think, oh my God, yes, shame, it's a bit of a problem for me, maybe. This checklist will give you, it's like a guide that will start showing you that, my God, it's actually got to a point where you need to do something about it. And it also gives you action steps to start making that happen. And you can find that on tinyurl.com/NotTodayNARC. Not today, NARC, NARC. So check it out there. That's the totally free guides there. So you can check it out if you felt like this conversation opened up something in you or made you think, or, you know, that's really a good, great next step for you there.
Yes. And I can put all of the links in the show notes and description, and also how you can be in touch with Emma. I really appreciate your time today, Emma. Thank you so much for being here.
It was a pleasure, Sasha. I hope you and your audience got something out of this conversation.
That's a wrap on my conversation with Emma Lyons. And what a ride, right? I love how she turns something as heavy as shame into something we can actually understand and do something about. Next week, we're shifting gears with Jessica Setnick, a registered dietitian and eating behavior expert. We'll explore how early food messages shape our relationship with eating, why guilt and shame show up at the table, and how to start finding peace with food without the self-punishment. It's a totally different angle on self-compassion, and it ties perfectly into everything Emma shared about dismantling shame. See you next time. Oh, and one last thing. The content shared on the High Functioning Disaster is for informational and conversational purposes only and is not intended as professional, medical, or mental health advice. Everyone's situation is unique, and what we talk about here may not apply to your specific circumstances. Please do what's right for you and always consult with a qualified professional for medical, mental health, financial, or legal guidance. You take care of you, boo. See you next time.